Good morning, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome into the Common Workspace Studios for this morning's drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future here on 1030 The Voice. I am your host, Zach Yenser. Full show ahead. We're going to get right into it. Our conversations with the candidates running for the governor of this beautiful state begin today. We've got a couple lined up, starting with Matt Salmon here in just a moment, running for the Republican nomination for governor. Governor Ducey is termed out. It is an open seat. We'll kick off with that in just a moment. Devin Underwood and Evren Sonmez, Living Streets Alliance, and the Talent Store will come on. We'll talk about how to get Tucson's workers and employers back to work well. We'll focus on the nonprofit industry here as we come out of COVID. But let's go ahead and jump in. 790-2040 is the live line number. Our first guest of the hour used to call in, Mr. Matt Salmon. Mr. Salmon, thanks for being on with us. How are you today?
Thanks, Zach. Really appreciate it. Great.
Yes, good, good. I was talking to someone the other day that often in the campaign season, there are less and less every time of kind of these long form versions of media conversations, especially at a local level. So really grateful that you are not with us for just one segment, but two segments this morning. I think it's going to be fun, and looking forward to talking about the issues. So I wanted to start with this segment with two questions. One that I ask and will ask every candidate in this race, and one that I will probably only ask you, and we'll get there in a minute.
All right.
But I ask every candidate, what was your tipping point moment? You've been elected to the House of Representatives, the U.S. House, for a total of five terms. You've run for governor once in 2002. You served as the chair of the Arizona Republican Party. You've been involved for three decades in Arizona politics. So what was your tipping point moment now to say, I'm the guy, I'm jumping in to run for governor? Why governor? Why now? And what is your platform?
Well, first of all, Zach, thanks so much. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the radio with you to talk to the folks in Tucson. And do want to share with the folks there that right after I graduated from college, my first professional job was in Tucson. I worked for Mountain Bell, that later became U.S. West and CenturyLink, and it's made all kinds of iterations, but it was the Bell system when I was there, and I lived there for 2 years. My oldest son was born at TMC, and so I have a really special place in my heart for Tucson, and I understand that the needs of Tucson are far different from the ones in Maricopa County, so this is really important. Zach, the tipping point for me, like every time in my life when I run for office, I'm 63 years old, and I've served in public office a total of 14 years. So most of my life has been in the private sector. A good portion of my life has been in service of our country, in standing up for what I believe are conservative values in Arizona's tipping point for me in every election I've ever been in, but more so this one than any, is that the stakes are as high as I've ever seen them in my life. Right now, the crushing tax hikes that the Biden administration is proposing, it's spending trillions of dollars that we really don't have, taking us further into debt for programs, expanding government into virtually every aspect of our lives, our work, our home, maybe even our churches, and it frightens me. And also, the border has never been more badly broken, really, since the time Obama served as president. And we've got to get control. We've got to protect Arizonans and put Arizona first. So the stakes right now are as high as I've ever seen them in my life, and I believe that we need a proven conservative fighter that's willing to stand up and not let the socialists that have been moving in from California turn us into California. Now, I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek because a lot of the people moving from California are good, solid conservatives that are sick and tired of the regulations and the taxation and the craziness coming out of California. But what boggles my mind is that there's some folks coming here that are leaving all that garbage, and then they're wanting to reinstitute it here in Arizona. And my answer to them is not on my watch.
We're with Matt Salmon this morning, running for the Republican nomination for governor for the state of Arizona in 2022. There's a couple of items in there, Matt, that I want to touch back on in more detail in our second segment. But here's the question that I wanted to ask you that I will probably only ask you just because of your breadth of experience. And you were also the chair of the Arizona Republican Party from 2005 to 2007. You were swept into the House of Representatives, as we talked about a second ago, for the first time in 1994, a time to me that kind of matches a lot of the populist and cultural sentiments of the current Republican Party. But the party of today seems also very different, Matt, from the compassionate conservatism and the kinder, gentler America, so to speak, of the President's Bush. How do you compare today's Republican Party, today's Arizona Republican Party, to the one that you've served over the last three decades? Similarities or differences?
You know, I've really taken umbrage over the years with some of the ideas that have come from our leaders. It seems like a lot of the times the Republican leadership has wanted to just put out watered-down Democrat policies. You know, yeah, we're bad, but we're not as bad as they are. I think where we're at right now, more than ever in the history of America, is that the Arizona Republican Party and the Republican Party in the country is more focused on delivering for Americans and delivering for the common person, not the corporate America. You know, in the past, I think that we were kind of branded as the party of the wealthy or the party of corporate America. I think one of the things that's really changed, and I think a lot for the better, in the last few years, is that we're really, really focused right now on, you know, regular Americans that are facing, you know, real challenges in the schools with their kids, real challenges when it comes to, you know, their payrolls, real challenges when it comes to running their businesses, small businesses. And I think we've made a shift to, you know, standing up for veterans, standing up for small businesses, standing up for the taxpayer. And I like that aspect of it. Now, one of the things I don't like, and it's not about the Republican Party, it's just about politics in general, is that people have gotten so vitriolic in defending their messages. And it feels like, you know, here in America, everybody is just waiting to be offended by somebody. And as soon as somebody says something, half the public wants to come out and have you tarred and feathered. And I mean, the anger quotient has never been higher. You know, one of my heroes was the father of conservative politics in England, named Sir Edmund Burke. And he made a quote one time. He said, "There's no idea so dangerous that it cannot be debated." And I think ideas are good. I think that's what our founding fathers envisioned, this great clash of ideas. But we need to get back to the point where maybe we can dislike the message but not the messenger, and we need to stop, you know, stop the name-calling and the hatred. I really do believe that, you know, first and foremost, we're all Americans. There are people in America that need to, you know, grow a little bit more of a spine and stand up for this country. But you know, I think that politics and maybe social media is a big part of it, where people can lob angry grenades at people and say horrible things without even sometimes putting their real name, you know, behind their accusations. And I've never seen, you know, more twisted, you know, lies and anger in my life. And honestly, look, I think that when it comes to leading with conservative ideas, the truth's on our side. Because the conservative ideology is really about common sense, and it's about human nature. It's about, you know, where most humans are. If you give people an opportunity, not give them stuff, but give them an opportunity to succeed and let them enjoy the largesse of their hard work and their ideas, then they're going to go out and they're going to do great things. That's been the hallmark of excellence in this country. And we've got to get back to that. We've got to get away from government as the solution to all your problems, and we've got to get back to, you know, self-sufficiency and helping people to help themselves and giving people opportunities. You know, that's where I think the Republican Party is. We're about giving people opportunities, not stuff.
Mm. We're with Matt Salmon again this morning, if you just tuned in, Republican candidate for governor of the state of Arizona here in the primary. When we come back, there's a couple of platform items, Matt, that you mentioned are important to you. We'll talk about the border. We'll talk about, as you phrased it on your platform, election integrity. We'll dig into those themes a little bit more, get to know where you're at on those issues. And then I think I have a fun question at the end. And so we'll go there here after a break. We're with Matt Salmon for one more segment. Don't go anywhere here on 1030 The Voice. Tipping Point returns.
Radio by and for the people of Tucson. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID, 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429, Equal Housing Opportunity.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona here in the Common Workspace Studios for this drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on 1030 The Voice. After a short break, and a good thing, too, because we've got a lot to talk about with our guest this hour. If you're just joining us, Matt Salmon running for the Republican nomination for governor of the state of Arizona and kicks off our conversations with as many candidates who are willing to come on the program as we can, Republicans and Democrats, talking with the people who are looking at the state of Arizona from a 30,000-foot view. Matt, we talked about your platform at large in the first segment, but I wanted to drill down a little bit on two items in particular. I've been, like you have, I'm sure, observing the data and reports along the border, and apolitically, I don't think how you pragmatically look at the situation and don't see a crisis. We've said, do we use that word? Do we not? Yeah. These are once in multi-decades numbers. In one of the largest Gallup surveys of Republicans and Democrats, Matt, in Arizona to date, last year, 93% of Democrats and 80% of Republicans support comprehensive immigration reform that includes a pathway to citizenship. And here's the number that's interesting to me with regard to your race, Matt Salmon. 77% of Republicans surveyed support a path to citizenship for Arizona's 24,000 DACA recipients, which was in the news last week, of course. You've mentioned immigration and the border as one of your top issues. Are Arizonans, by these numbers, on track with your vision for immigration and the border here in the state of Arizona, or do you differ at all?
I think first and foremost, we've got to get the border secure before we even talk about anything else. You know, for the last 4 years, the border was pretty darn secure. In the first 6 months of this year, it's turned into a full-fledged crisis. And I've talked with countless people on the border, ranchers, you know, regular families, and it's really putting a strain on our, you know, our system. I've met with just about all of the border sheriffs across Arizona, and I've talked with them. And they really believe that it's a serious crisis. And if we don't get a handle on it, it's going to turn into a far worse situation even than it is now. And so I really do believe that first and foremost, we've got to double down. We've got to give the border sheriffs everything that they need to be able to be successful to assist in this. I applaud Governor Ducey for using the National Guard on the border. I think that's a good step. I also believe that the border sheriffs are going to need every tool that they need to succeed. They're getting wireless cameras. Make no mistake, the problem at the border is 100% because of the drug cartels. They are the ones that are transferring people and human trafficking. They are transferring weapons and drugs, and the drugs that are a poison to our children, fentanyl. It's a scourge on our society. And I really do believe that before we can talk about going forward on any of this other stuff, we've got to secure the border. That's got to be our first and foremost responsibility.
We're with Matt Salmon this morning. Really, these first conversations are generally very high level. We have, what is it, Matt, a year plus in just the primary, maybe a little bit less.
So
we've got a long ways to go, and we'll go ahead.
Yeah, it's going to be a long year.
We've got a ways to dig into the issues, but I wanted to get to another one you mentioned. It's in the news. It's national. It's on your platform, Matt, and that is, as you phrase it, election integrity. The process of the Maricopa ballot audit has certainly proven a lucrative fundraising topic for the AZ GOP. Some of those reports are coming out. But I've been interested by this, and I'd be curious to get your thoughts. In a late May poll by a pretty respected public affairs firm in Arizona, 68% of independents and 90% of Democrats opposed the audit, which interested me. 44% of respondents said that they were less likely to vote for a candidate who supported the audit. This polling group called the issue, and I'm quoting, these are their words, an electoral cul-de-sac for Republicans running statewide in 2022, unquote. Are they wrong, Matt Salmon?
You know what? I heard a phrase one time that's really stuck with me. It's sunlight is the best disinfectant. And there are a number of folks in this state that believe that there were things that went on in the election that were untoward and that were not right. And so I believe shining a light is not a bad thing to do at all. In fact, I support that. And I think that ultimately the election integrity in our state is going to be protected by the laws that we set. And two of them, were upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court recently. One was a ban on ballot harvesting. And I think that was incredibly important. People, we've heard stories over and over and over of folks going into old folks' homes and, basically telling people how to vote or even, moving the marker for them and then harvesting these ballots and taking them in. So Arizona rightly, I believe in 2016, banned ballot harvesting, and the U.S. Supreme Court just recently upheld that. The other one was if you vote in the wrong precinct, your vote doesn't count. And both of those laws were upheld. But I also believe that voter ID is just common sense. I mean, you have to show ID to get on an airplane. I mean, isn't that even a little less important than one of the most important roles that we have, and that's voting? Shouldn't you have to prove that you're who you say you are when you're voting? I think that's reasonable. And I think that we should have the same kind of requirements for voting by mail. I understand that this last election, 92% of our election was by mail, and we should have a requirement that you prove who you say you are before you vote. And if you're opposed to that, does that mean, what does that say about you? I mean, if you don't think that people should have to prove who they say they are when they vote, does that mean that just anybody can vote regardless of what country they're from or what part of this country they're from? I think we should have stringent rules and regulations. And I'm not about making it harder to vote. I'm about making it harder to cheat.
We're with Matt Salmon again this morning. If you're just joining with us, a Republican nominee or a Republican candidate for the nomination for the Republican Party for the governor's seat here in the state of Arizona. Here's a question I've been looking forward to. We will probably have to end on this, Matt, but it's the question I've been looking forward to asking you. Much of state politics today, and I don't know if this bothers you, it bothers me a little bit, is dictated by national trends and issues. Kind of is what it is. But in one of the largest surveys of Arizonans to date, I mentioned it earlier, Arizonans across the political spectrum have talked about their priority issues, including housing, healthcare, jobs, water, and the environment as priorities. Is there any state issue outside your listed platform that you get really excited about tackling should you be elected to the seat next year?
There's a couple of them. I mean, the three things and the three takeaways I want people to know when they're thinking about voting for Matt Salmon for governor is my top three priorities are protection, and protection includes a lot of things, from protecting our streets to protecting our borders to protecting the integrity of our elections. It includes a lot of things. The second one is the economy. And I would like to take our income tax to zero in a responsible way so that we can compete effectively for jobs with Texas, Florida, and Nevada. And I believe that that will be an important way to get there. And then the last thing, I can't think of a more important issue that we face as a country, as a state, and that's education. Right now, we're not coming close to doing the job that we need to in both K-12 and producing the number of baccalaureate degrees in this state that we really need to be ultra competitive. I really want and believe that if we make Arizona an innovation society, a highly educated innovation society, and we bring the best jobs to Arizona, that rising tide lifts all boats. Everybody does well. When you bring those high-paying jobs to Arizona and you've got a talented pool to draw from because we have superior education in this state, and kids don't have to leave Arizona to get good jobs. They can stay here and stay with their families to get good jobs. I think that is something that really drives Arizonans, and it's important to everybody.
Yeah, you know, Matt Salmon, it's one of my passion topics as well. In fact, we had a guy on the show you might know decently well, President Michael Crow, had him on the show earlier this week, and our second segment together.
Yeah.
You might have met him once or twice. Of course, the joke, if you're listening, Matt Salmon was the Vice President for Government Affairs at ASU since 2016, another part of your resume. But we talked about how do we create an innovation state. And I was excited to see the state legislature, Matt Salmon, invest dollars into the new economy initiative and to really bring this state into the 21st century. Matt Salmon,
we have a lot of talent. Zach, we have a lot of talent in Arizona. And by the way, I did resign from my position from ASU month ago. But I will tell you this: I truly do believe that if we can create a culture of innovation in this state, where we're producing the next best and most wanted products that people want or need in their lives, if we can do that here in Arizona, I believe we can, then we can bring the best paying jobs to Arizona.
Yes.
And not just Maricopa County. I think one thing that COVID has shown us is that people can work from anywhere. You know, you can do Zoom calls and you can work through your computer. But one of my other priorities is to make sure that every community in Arizona has 5G, that we move toward, having the best broadband that we possibly can so that you can live anywhere. But I really want to do everything I can to make sure that we lift the standard of living for all people in Arizona. And I think we do that by, you know, a great education for everybody and opportunities to become whatever you want to be.
Matt Salmon for Arizona Governor. Thank you, sir, for being with us. We'll do this again soon, and take care out there.
A Bloomberg Money Minute and CBS News at the bottom of every hour. 10:30, The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyilovewhereilive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and schedule time with Devin and her team.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
And good morning again to you, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome back into the Common Workspace Studios for this morning drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. If you're just joining us, we kicked off our candidate conversations with the individuals, both Democrat and Republican, running for governor of this beautiful state. Kicking us off today was Matt Salmon, running for the Republican nomination. We had him on for two segments, and I actually felt like we fit a lot in to that conversation. If you missed it, you can go to kvy.com/podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you're listening to podcasts. Search Tipping Point with Zach Yenser and catch up there. Katie Hobbs, running for the Democratic nomination, is with us. I believe it's on August 6th. It's the first Friday of August for a bit. So here we go. The primary is not until about a year from August this year, but we're already in the thick of it. That's how this election thing works. It never ends. But it's okay. We got you here on 1030 The Voice and Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. We're going to turn the page now for our regular conversation with Devin Underwood of the Talent Store. We call it Workforce Pivots, getting Tucson's workers and employers back to work well here after COVID. And I'm also excited to have on as well for this conversation, Emily Yetman with Living Streets Alliance. We're going to talk about one of the biggest industries in Tucson, and that is the nonprofit organizations that make this community so great and what it is. What does it look like to develop great teams and bring on the right talent and come through COVID well in the nonprofit industry? That'll take us the rest of the way to 10 o'clock. So let's get into it first. Devin Underwood, good morning to you. Thanks for being on as always.
Hi, Zach. How are you? Sorry about the dog bark. I just had to point my finger at her and go, shh.
Well, I didn't hear it. Maybe I wasn't paying attention. So I think you're in the clear. And Emily.
Yeah, right.
You never know. Do I say it? Do I not? But you know what? It's okay. After a year and a half of COVID, we are all used to the homework life. Emily Yetman is with us as well. Emily, good to be with you again. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Beck? Nice to be here this morning.
Yes, excited to have you on the air here on our live line, 520-790-2040. Devin, I want to turn it over to you. I'm excited to get into this conversation, talking about Living Streets Alliance and then how they're growing their team and how the nonprofit industry can grow their team for success in Tucson. If you're a nonprofit listening, this is especially for you. So, Devin, over to you.
Yeah, I happen to be lucky enough to be friends with Emily, so I get to hear about Living Streets and how they're growing and her thoughts and visions for Tucson and what they're going to do. And I thought it was so important to bring her on to talk about, you know, how she thought through COVID, where their new direction is, even without COVID, how are they going to impact the community? And as she thinks through the how, who does she need on her team to make that happen? You know, one of their biggest events, Sokovia, couldn't happen last year. And so rethinking how they still have impact, how they still bring people together, where else they connect out to the community to fulfill their mission, I thought it'd be really important to bring her on. So I'm excited to hear a little bit from Emily about how you thought through that. And I know you added some new roles to your team as you were envisioning where you guys are headed.
Yeah. Well, I am going to be perfectly honest and just say that there was a lot of kind of fumbling through, and I, you know, what a crazy time. But one thing I will say about and reflecting on the past year is that, you know, it gave us a chance to pause in a way that we wouldn't have otherwise. So we're a 10-year-old nonprofit, been, you know, experiencing tremendous growth since the start, and we're kind of on the wheel, you know, grinding and just going forward, plowing forward. And I think when COVID hit, we did kind of have to put everything on hold and on pause and reevaluate. And from a staffing standpoint, what that meant was actually thinking about the future and what the future needs of us and what our community needs of us down the road, and looking at the positions that, that would be essential to make that happen going forward. And whereas we've kind of always been working from probably more of a, like a startup space where we had a really amazing team of people, but a lot of the positions were kind of molded around who these people were, and that it worked great, but it probably wasn't going to be sustainable forever. So that was kind of a big realization and moment for us in terms of thinking about our team and how we would, you know, who we needed at the table and how we'd work together going forward. And then from the work that we actually do on the ground, which is kind of reimagining our streets as public spaces, the pandemic was a really transformative moment for that, because people did get out and explore their community more with their families. They had more time, for one thing, at home to do things, but with parks and playgrounds and pretty much everything closed down for a long period of time, means that we had to get creative. And so we got to reconnect with our neighbors and rediscover our neighborhoods and, you know, try new things. So we saw streeteries popping up. We saw shared streets happening and slow streets in our communities. And these are all things that we realize, you know, are ways that people might want to experience their community after the pandemic. And so figuring out how to make those things lasting and kind of replicable. And that's been kind of our biggest pivot, is trying to ensure that those things can continue even as, you know, the next normal comes to life for us here in Tucson. So those are the main things that come to mind for me, Devin. And it's such a trip to think back over the past 16 months and how much we've all gone through.
Absolutely. And when you are developing the new roles, when you're thinking, okay, here's where we've seen impact, or where we see people participating with each other, where we've seen community come together, here's where Living Streets can really lean in and make an impact. How did you think through who was needed, skills, experience-wise? And then how did you look for them? How did you find them? How did you talk about yourself?
Yeah, so one thing that I feel really proud of and lucky that we've been doing the work of since the start is thinking a lot about our workplace culture. And we've had a very kind of, I think, people-first model where we really value shared leadership, shared decision-making. And so, you know, really trusting the people that we're working with to be first and foremost passionate about the mission, but also, you know, carry forward the values of the organization and align with the values of the organization. So when we were thinking about who to bring on the team, that was always front and center, was those things have to align, and being really clear about that being non-negotiable. And then, you know, having practices and policies with our, you know, HR-wise that but accommodate people who are having new priorities, right? Like, I think the pandemic gave people a lot of time to reflect on the, you know, and reevaluate, like, life is short and, you know, how can I have more work-life balance? And so being able to offer things like unlimited paid time off and really flexible work schedule with where and how you work and, you know, I think I'm still juggling the kids at home until school starts again. So it's like we're humans first. And so I think being able to offer those things is really helpful, but also being able to assert that, you know, in return, like we expect, we have kind of shared agreements that people are going to show up and really be committed when they are working. And I think that really aligns with kind of idea work that we've been doing, putting diversity, equity, inclusion, access first, and really recognizing how those things show up. And so when we've been hiring, we've been putting those sorts of statements and practices and policies up front. And I think that that's really appealing to a lot of people who are looking to have play a more impactful role in their communities and in the world, right? Like we've got some pretty big burning issues coming up, and I think people want to be able to make a difference and, you know, put food on the table while they're doing it too.
You know, I think this is so interesting as you and Devin are talking, because I think where this is unique is that it was during the pandemic period where you started to say, we need to move from just kind of who's on the team to what does it mean to have a team and who do we want on that? And then how do we create that culture fit? How do we connect with that right talent? I'm curious. We're going to go to a break here partway through this conversation. I'm curious on the way back. I'm looking forward to hearing what has been a challenge in attracting those team members. How do you connect with that talent? And then I know you know Devin. You know Devin's work as a partner in this whole journey of figuring out what is our ideal team and how do we find the right people to fit in there. I'm loving this opportunity, not only meet a great organization doing really good work, but also to kind of be a fly on the wall and share in the experience of probably a lot of nonprofits listening right now who are going, yep, that was me. I was there. What does it look like to reshift and retool, to move from a 10-year startup phase to now a really established scaling up organization? That's the conversation we're having here on Tipping Point Workforce Pivots with our regular contributor Devin Underwood and a special guest Emily Yetman, executive director of Living Streets Alliance. We'll be right back after a short break. The conversation continues here on 1030 The Voice.
To Vail and everywhere in between. 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Area Ari Barrera, NMLS ID, 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429, Equal Housing Opportunity.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk, or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Tucson's source for trusted news and talk, 1030, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson, all of Southern Arizona, here in the Common Workspace Studios for Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on 1030 The Voice. We're with Devin Underwood for Workforce Pivots, getting Tucson's workers and employers back to work well. And a special guest in studio joining the two of us is Emily Yetman, the Executive Director of Living Streets Alliance. As a real-life nonprofit organization going through and doing all the things that Devin and I usually talk about, we get to talk to you in Emily Yetman, excited to have you on the conversation that Devin is going to continue to guide us through. But I wanted to ask to get us kicked off here into the segment, Emily, is, you know, I think the real questions are, as you went through this restructuring, rethinking of your nonprofit organization, Living Streets Alliance, through COVID, how did you not only figure out here's the talent we need, but how did you find that talent, and what was a challenge in attracting those team members? So Emily, over to you, and then Devin will jump in.
Yeah, so like I mentioned before, that kind of, you know, knowing what our non-negotiables are, I think, you know, there has to first and foremost be mission alignment and kind of alignment with our values as an organization. And so that, you know, not everyone has that. And so I think that creates a pool. And then for thinking about Tucson, right, and people who have a passion for transportation advocacy or have nonprofit experience and mission alignment, like that narrows it down even further. And then if you're looking for a really specific skill set or background or experience, it can get really limiting. And so for us, I think, you know, a big challenge was just casting a wide enough net, at least initially, and just, you know, we really learned that we had to be patient and persistent and hold off until we could feel that we had found the right person. So that meant, in a couple cases, actually, you know, going back out a couple times for some of the positions, which is hard when you're really, you know, so eager to find the right person and get the position filled. So that can always be a challenge. But we first and foremost, we worked with Devin, which was fantastic. And loved working with her because she has access, right? And Devin, like, the fact that you have this larger pool of applicants that you can reach out to and that you have all of these resources was huge for us. So that was such a tremendous asset.
And I'm certainly curious, I guess, to kind of then turn those questions on you, Devin, as a partner in this. What was your guidance to connect with the right talent? And what was the biggest challenge in attracting team members? Same questions. I think there's so many organizations right now listening or who will listen later on who are struggling to figure out who is the right person for this piece of my organization. And then once I figure that out, which is a challenge, I'm having a hard time finding the right people. We hear that from organizations so much, Devin, you more than anybody. So walk us through this kind of, I guess, real life case study here. How did you connect with the right talent and what was the biggest challenge?
Yeah, and you know, I think Emily and Living Streets has such a head start because they know who they are. And that's number one. You have to know who you are. You have to understand what's going to impact your organization and then really think through who do you need for getting this done. So I had, you know, I didn't help her with all these positions because they have an incredible network. They leverage their donors. They leverage their connection in the community. They know how to communicate their story out into the world. And so they're already a huge step ahead. So it makes anything I do to help them, even on one position versus the four she was looking for, much easier. So I want to start there is know thyself and be able to know what your story is. And once you know what your story is, someone like me can cast the net. We have the big LinkedIn seats. We have the leverage networks. We have the technology and the research ability and time so you can keep doing your job. We just cast the net and then we storytell. We talk about who you are and then we vet according to what you need. And that's really the when we're doing our best work with a client. And so a lot of what we do at the front end is to help them get to where Emily is. Know what you need and know who you are. Know what you're offering, know what fits with your team, and know what's going to impact your mission, for-profit or nonprofit. And then we kind of just get busy working for you. And so that's the biggest piece of the puzzle, I think.
Yeah, Emily, you know, Devin, go ahead.
I was going to say that one thing that I really appreciated, too, was, like, we're a pretty small organization still, right? And so we don't have a huge machine working behind us that, you know, takes care of the hiring process. And for us, we knew what we wanted. We knew what we needed. And yet we didn't know what kind of process would yield that for us. And so that's where having your expertise and kind of access to the tools and the processes that you've set up over time was just huge for us. It's not something we would have been able to figure out easily on our own, if at all. And so for me, that was, like, by far and away one of the most valuable things was you knowing how to set up a process that aligned with our values and would yield the pool of applicants that we wanted and needed, right?
I think what's really interesting about talking with you, Emily, this morning, Living Streets Alliance Executive Director, is that to some extent, you know, Devin works with companies of such a diversity of size. And so we talk and have been talking for a year. How does Tucson navigate this rethinking, this reshift, this retooling of all kinds of organizations and their teams? And I think often my hunch is that somebody listening will go, well, that works for a 50-person team. That works for, you know, a 150-member team or a multinational corporation. But I just have 5-6 employees, and this is a little bit too much into the weeds. I probably don't need to do this. Your team, Emily, is what now? 5 people? 6 people?
Yeah, we're back up at 6, which feels great.
Right.
Super exciting.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so even though it sounds kind of meta, this storytelling and then best fit and then putting those together and saying, okay, this is our story, this is who we need, it sounds very 30,000 foot, but it's also very tactical. And it seems like it's worked for you really well over the last few months.
Yeah, and I can't wait to see what it leads to as well. We're just all getting back online right now. And this is where the magic starts to happen. So I'm really excited for the next couple months.
Devin, back over to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you make a great point, Zach. I think that it feels like a lot when I talk, probably on this show, when I talk to people, and I tend to, and I don't want to make it sound complicated because it doesn't have to be. Even more so, the smaller you are, the more you need someone advocating for who you are as a brand. I was just talking to another nonprofit consultant. And we were talking about the talent coming into the workforce, younger millennials, even to Gen Z, as they're getting into the workforce, they're even more risk averse. They're even more afraid of instability. And sometimes small company can translate to them as unknown or risky. And so how do you create your brand as a small company? How do you stand out? How do you tell your story? How do you showcase stability? How do you showcase the opportunity so they're not just going after working for Google, Facebook, Amazon, et cetera, et cetera? And so it's going to continue to be important. It does sound kind of meta at times, but it's not complicated if you get the right partner or you know who you are and know how to kind of talk about it.
You know, I think this conversation is so valuable. I have even family members who say, look, before COVID, I used to put out a job application and I would have 60 people who would apply. I put that same application out 3 weeks ago, they will tell me, and I got four. You know, I think as business owners, as executive directors, as leaders, we are in this weird spot where the labor has changed, the means of attracting team members has changed, the entire world has kind of gone on its head. And if we hear it once, we hear it a million times. I can't find the right people. I can't find people who stick around. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I have many more questions to ask, but if I did, I'm going to have to cut one of you off. So maybe we end here. Emily Yetman, Executive Director of LSA, thank you for being with us. Devin, your website for anyone who wants to reach out to you and talk about this one-on-one.
It's yourtalentstore.com, and I'd love to end with Emily talking about what Living Streets, how to connect with Living Streets as well, because I believe what they're doing is so important to who we want to be as a community and how we connect with each other. So, Emily, where can they go to find you guys, too?
And, Emily, we have literally 1 minute, so the pitch has to be quick.
Well, I'll give the website first, livingstreetsalliance.org. We're on Facebook and social as well. And we do a lot of community fun events, so check it out and get involved. We'd love to have you join us.
I love it. Emily, thanks for your time this morning. Devin, as always, thanks for guiding Tucson's really employees and employers in these uncharted waters. Appreciate you both, and we'll see each other soon. And Devin will be with us in continuity to help our organizations and companies, nonprofit or private sector, navigate these times. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
When we return on the program tomorrow, Friday, Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott is on with us to talk about what's going on in Pima County and what's ahead. Lots to cover. We'll also talk with Jason Robinson, MassMutual, for Financial Friday. Get your finances right. We got you covered here on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. Stay safe out there, Tucson. Hugh Hewitt up next. Bill Buckmaster at noon. We'll be back at 9 on Friday. See you, Tucson.